This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 3rd of April 2026. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 3rd of April. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Nicholas Bracegirdle.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: safety demands at accident black spot, Talking News volunteer honoured by PCC, and charity set to change its welfare support. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was safety demands at accident black spot. Three crashes in 3 weeks at Junction. Fresh calls have been made to redesign one of Hampshire's most notorious junctions to make it safe. This comes after reports of three crashes at the Cart and Horses Junction in Kingsworthy in the past 3 weeks. The most recent crash, a three-car collision, occurred on Thursday, March the 26th at approximately 5:34 p.m. Police attended the scene with a spokesperson saying that no injuries were sustained in the crash. According to local councillor Jackie Porter, this was the third crash in less than 3 weeks. There have been scores of collisions, several involving fatalities and hundreds of near misses at the junction where the A33 meets the B3047. Councillor Porter, Lib Dem for the Worthies on Winchester City Council and for Itchen Valley on Hampshire County Council, said, "Every accident is inconvenient and time-consuming, but at the Cart and Horses, we've had three in less than 3 weeks. The mangled cars sit sadly on the roadside, and we hope the occupants are okay. All happens at peak times, and most are recorded on the junction CCTV. I get to see the footage. They follow a pattern, and as a result, there have been a few changes made. Last week, the massive pothole there seemed to be acting like a roundabout, creating another hazard. The County Council responded to my plea and filled it last Thursday evening, but there's been another accident today. A while ago, the County Council conducted a consultation for a new junction design. Traffic lights came out as the preferred option, but the County Council decided they couldn't afford the £5 million to build it, so it hasn't happened. Meanwhile, the road gets busier, now with the threat of a distribution centre at Popham. A County Council spokesperson said, "We are aware of a number of collisions at the crossroads. Following these reports, an inspection was carried out to confirm that all safety signage and road markings are present and clearly visible. To improve safety at the junction, we introduced a series of safety enhancements in May 24. These included replacing give-way signs with stop signs on the B3047 and installing an electronic speed indicator on the southbound A33 approach. These measures complement the existing vehicle-activated warning sign on the northbound A33, which alerts drivers to traffic turning or entering from the side roads ahead. The improvements, together with the new 40-mile-an-hour speed limit and new street lighting introduced in 2018, have contributed to an overall reduction in the severity of incidents at the junction. While our case for national funding for further enhancements as part of the Junction 9 works was unsuccessful, we continue to monitor the site closely and investigate any incidents reported. As previously reported, the junction has been a known accident black spot for many years. The five-man road policing task team, launched last month, said they would be looking at the junction, with Sergeant Stephen Phillips saying, "That is where we need to work with our partners, speak with local authority and look at opportunities to design or reconfigure junctions so it's safer for the future." And there is a picture of said junction, which isn't very explanatory, really.
Talking News volunteered honoured by PCC. Winchester Talking Newspaper chairman has been honoured at the Police and Crime Commissioner Awards. John Richards was among dozens of volunteers and community heroes who received recognition at the 5th annual ceremony hosted by Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones at the Utility Bowl in Hedge End on March the 13th. Mr. Richards was nominated for the Community Volunteer of the Year Award for leading a voluntary-run service supporting visually impaired residents across the city. He attended the ceremony and was presented with a certificate in recognition of his nomination. The service provides weekly audio recordings of local news from the Hampshire Chronicle, ensuring visually impaired people do not miss out on stories affecting their area. Mr. Richards, who has been involved with the organisation for nearly 30 years, said that the work plays a vital role in people's lives. He said it's not only important, it's vital for many blind and partially sighted people because it keeps them in touch with the world around them and, in fact, reality. One of the problems with loss of sight is that it can make people feel very isolated. They rely upon us, and many of them have said that when they hear the yellow wallet flop onto the doormat, they think, oh good, it's the talking newspaper. The recordings, which last around 90 minutes, are produced each week by a team of around 50 volunteers and deliver free of charge to its listeners across the Winchester area. Mr. Richards, who has served as chairman for 13 years, said the recognition was shared by the whole team. He said it means a terrific amount. I've accepted this nomination on behalf of all the people who volunteer. It's not just me. He added that volunteers are essential to keeping the service running. He said they're vital. Without them, we can't do any of it. We have a lot of different roles, from editors and presenters to people who visit listeners. Every job is as important as every other one. We all rely on each other. Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones praised those recognised, highlighting their selfless dedication to supporting communities. Mrs. Jones said, I am always proud and humbled to hear how so many people make such a difference in their communities. These individuals are the ones who show up and go the extra mile, often without expecting any recognition at all. And there's a number of photographs, but the most important one, of course, is one of John Richards with his certificate.
The charity is set to change its welfare support. An almshouse in Winchester has announced plans to deregister from the Care Quality Commission, CQC. St John's Winchester, a charity that has supported people in the city for nearly 900 years, is considering to deregister from the CQC and is now consulting on future care provision for residents. The organisation says the decision follows careful consideration of regulatory, operational and long-term sustainability factors and affects only its regulated care services. Tim Bissett, the chief executive of St John's Winchester, said, St John's has been supporting people in Winchester for almost 900 years and our responsibility is to make sure we can continue to do so for generations to come. In recent years, we have been operating within a highly regulated care framework that only applies to a small number of residents, but which brings significant cost and complexity for the charity. Where residents need specialist care, we already work with external providers who are often better placed to deliver that support, and that will continue. This consultation is about finding a model that allows us to use our resources wisely, remain financially sustainable and continue to provide safe, supportive almshouse living for all our residents, not just now but long into the future. The charity is currently consulting with residents, staff and families about proposed changes and potential new models of community and welfare support. No final decisions have been made. St John's has emphasised that no resident will be left without appropriate care or support as a result of the changes. It's also said it will be working closely with Hampshire County Council to ensure continuity of care where commissioned regulated support is required. The proposals centre on how regulated care is delivered and include the creation of a new almshouse community team. Accommodation and broader support for residents will remain unchanged. The charity has confirmed that no redundancies have been announced, no final staffing structure has been decided, and there is currently no set end date for the existing service. All feedback will receive during this period will be carefully reviewed before any decisions are finalised, the charity said. And there is a nice picture of St John's former chairman, Clive Cook, and the current chief executive, Tim Bissett, in an image outside in the street.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements. Christian comment, letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, First Person and Belgarum. We start with the death announcements this week. Arnold, Pete Arnold, known as Freddie, died peacefully at Winchester Hospice, aged 62. Edwards, John Michael Edwards, died peacefully at home on the 20th of February, aged 79. Frey, Dorothy Joan Frey, died on the 14th of March, aged 106. Gordon, Robert Michael Gordon, died at St Catherine's View Care Home on the 4th of March, aged 89. Hindson, Helen Felicity Hindson, MBE, died on the 13th of March, aged 91, and she was a former county councillor and honorary alderman at Winchester City Council. Parsons, Yvonne Ann Parsons, peacefully at Winchester Hospice, aged 81. And Smith, Rosemary Smith, on the 22nd of March, aged 72. Nicholas, could we have a Christian comment, please?
The history behind Maundy Thursday. Today is traditionally called Maundy Thursday, which is a weird word. Have you ever wondered what it means? For most of us, it just means the last working day before a long bank holiday weekend. But in churches, it is marked as a special day. The word Maundy comes from the Old English word, a shortened version of the word commandment. Today is the day when churches remember Jesus' Last Supper with his friends. Maybe you know the story. He's gathered his best friends together for a celebration meal, and for a whole lot of strange things started to happen. When he shares the bread out, he shares, "This is my body broken for you." With hindsight, we know he's talking about his body, which will be broken on the cross when he's crucified on Good Friday. But his friends have no idea what is going on. He also tells them that one of them is going to betray him, which really spooks them all. But the main part of that meal which we remember when we use the word Maundy is when Jesus knelt down and washed his disciples' feet, saying, "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as much as I have loved you." Imagine how we might change the world if we could love one another with the same depth of love which Jesus has for us. Imagine how we might live different toy if we already knew deep in our souls how much we were loved by Jesus. It's the biggest weekend of the whole year for the church. If you want to hear a bit more of the story, there's never been a better time to pop your head around the door and say hello. And this article is written by Tess Cohen Lawton, the Reverend Canon Missioner at Winchester Cathedral. She's a new contributor to Christian Comment. Tess is responsible for leading the work of mission and evangelism across the cathedral to build up its common life and enhance its contribution to the wider common good, whilst also developing a new partnership, engaging with diverse audiences, and encouraging the growth and nurture of the cathedral organisation.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, please.
And this one is headed Bus Station from Terry Revel. Once again, there is talk of the closure of our bus station. Do these idiots that are pushing ahead with Silver Hill development realise the carnage that will follow its demolition on the Broadway? One dreads to think of it. Exactly where do these people that make these ridiculous decisions think mums and babies, the old and infirmed people that use the bus for their shopping needs, senior citizens, go to catch a bus, according to these people, all over the city? Think on, people. Think on. From Terry Revel in Otterbourne.
How green? Just how green is Winchester MP Danny Chambers? On Thursday, January the 15th, I attended a public meeting where he said that in his first year as MP, he had chosen to sponsor the Animal Welfare Bill rather than the Climate and Nature Bill because the government wouldn't vote for a C and N bill, while no MP would vote against an Animal Cruelty Bill. I expect my MP to be tackling the most important issues for his constituents, not the easiest ones. Being kind to puppies is fine, but hardly on the same scale with the ending the cycle of failed harvests and extreme weather events. Come on, Dr. Danny. If you want a second term, start walking the walk. And that was from Mike Nell of Stockbridge Road, Sutton Scotney.
Should stay put. May I agree with others regarding the present bus station? The current one may need refreshing, but that is exactly where it was needed, near the centre of the city. To move it to the railway station, not train station as some mistakenly call it, would move it a mile or more from where people need it. The railway station is out on a limb, and if one is elderly, pushing a pram or loaded with shopping may as well be a million miles away. To run, as I hear suggested, a shuttle from the Broadway to the railway station just creates more traffic. Please, Winchester City Council, do not replicate chaotic Southampton with buses dotted around the streets and side roads to the confusion of many. Developers only think of their bottom line and plan accordingly. Please don't allow them to ruin a lovely city. That's from MJ Napier of Chandler's Ford.
And this from City Councillor O'Brien Laming. Sorry, missed that one. It's headed Clarity Needed. The Bushfield planning application has now entered its final consultation period, yet the documentation remains incomplete. Notably, there is still no formal response from Highways. This raises a concern. Has the City Council been placed under pressure to progress this application despite the absence of essential information? This proposal is highly contentious. Throughout the developer's consultation, the plans, specification, and even the core narrative appeared to shift repeatedly. It is therefore vital that the public and the planning authority have clarity on any amendments and their implications. While new cycleways and footpaths may appear positive at first glance, the proposed routes do not meaningfully reduce car dependency as claimed. Instead, they risk causing environmental harm. Two of the suggested paths cut directly across Whiteshute Ridge, a carefully managed and ecologically sensitive City Council project. The paths to Badger Farm would require major engineering work to accommodate increased footfall. The lit route suggested to Ivy Close is even more contentious and risks damaging a sensitive ecosystem which includes dormice, plants, raptors, etc. The site proposes only limited parking, with overflow expected to be absorbed by the park and ride. This is unrealistic. During peak periods, such as Christmas, where will the visitors park? The developer's own map shows walking times of over 10 minutes from the park and ride and similar distances from Badger Farm. Do they genuinely believe people would pay to park when free parking is available at Badger Farm? By the developer's own estimation, traffic flows onto St Cross roundabout will significantly increase. This roundabout is already operating at or beyond capacity, with queues regularly forming on all approach roads. Additional vehicle movements will also load the M3, which already experiences saturation at times. The cumulative impact on congestion, journey times, and driver behaviour raises clear concerns about highway safety, including increased risk of collisions, rat running on unsuitable local roads, and delays to emergency services. How will these impacts be mitigated in practice, and by when? Since 2023, the authorities and developers have been seeking a solution to the existing problems at St Cross Roundabout, yet no effective deliverable scheme has been brought forward. It is therefore unreasonable to approve further development that worsens an already unresolved and unsafe situation. The environmental risks are substantial. The site supports habitats for dormice, badgers, voles, raptors and rare plants, including orchids. Yet the application fails to demonstrate any meaningful assessment of increased pollution from additional vehicle movements. And this is from Brian Laming, City Councillor for Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery.
Tax bill. I have today received my council tax bill for 2026-27. It includes an A4 leaflet from the Police and Crime Commissioner. A quarter of this report is taken up by a photograph of the Commissioner, Donna Jones. This is the third year in succession that Miss Jones has needed to show us her photograph in 25% of her report, rather than to explain what she does, how our money is spent on police work, or how to contact various police departments. Would this have anything to do with the fact that she is hoping to be mayor of the proposed enlarged Hampshire local government body? Will 25% of the cost of producing the Police and Crime Commissioner leaflet be paid for by the Conservative Party? If not, why am I subsidising Miss Jones' self-publicising political ambitions through my rates bill? And that's from Tetra Jones, Lane End, Oslebury.
A house sale was the most appropriate course, is the next letter. We write in response to last week's letter concerning Charlotte Sherknock Place, which the late Mr. Christopher Webb very generously bequeathed to the Landmark Trust. Our charity has been caring for historic buildings for over 60 years, and we take our responsibilities for them extremely seriously. The water damage to this building occurred before it was in our ownership, and the remedial work was carried out by the executors. Chris Webb was aware of the range of potential outcomes for the house, including sale, at the time he made his generous bequest. Landmark explored a number of options when it came to us and spent in excess of £100,000 on repairs before concluding that the sale was the most appropriate course. And that is from Anna Kay, who is the director of the Landmark Trust in Maidenhead in Berkshire.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. Now we have editorial comment, please, Nikki.
Headed Fix the Cart and Horses Junction. Few transport issues in our area have lingered as long as the debate over the Cart and Horses Junction at Kingsworthy. Anyone who's battled through it at peak times knows the difficulty. Uncertain hesitancy over who has the right of way, awkward manoeuvres and an ever-present sense of risk. For years there have been studies, consultations and promises of further reviews, yet the basic problem remains unsolved. It is time for the Hampshire County Council to stop debating and start delivering a proper solution, a roundabout. The existing crossroads simply cannot cope with the traffic volumes it faces. As Kingsworthy and neighbouring Headbornworthy continue to grow, more vehicles are funnelling through this convoluted layout, adding to congestion and raising concerns about safety. The site's accident record, though not extreme, should be enough to prompt meaningful action rather than yet another round of delay. A roundabout would reduce conflict points, smooth traffic flows and restore confidence to drivers. Other schemes across the district have shown how effective such redesigns can be in cutting queues and improving safety. The principle is proven. What's missing here is resolve. A long-running excuse has been the nearby work at Junction 9. A more free-flowing interchange may well attract more traffic onto nearby roads, including the Cart and Horses Junction. A roundabout would not just ease congestion, it would show that local voices are being heard and that practical priorities can take precedence over bureaucracy. Let's get it built.
Thank you. First person, Norma.
And George Hayter writes, I asked AI to interpret a dream. I had a dream, and as soon as I woke up, I asked artificial intelligence to interpret it. Usually, dreams fade fast from memory, but this one I managed to recall completely. Within 5 minutes, I had a summary of it safely typed into my computer. Before I uploaded my vivid account of the dream, I tapped in, "Can you tell me what this dream might mean or indicate?" Also, I told AI that I am semi-retired after years of being a full-time Hampshire Chronicle journalist. I explained that in the dream I was back in as a full-time reporter and still working for the real-life editor for whom I had worked for years. Almost word for word, here is the rest of the dream summary, I fed into AI. In the newspaper office, the editor told me to go and interview a well-known person called Max. I couldn't think who Max was. After discussion, it was agreed that the editor would accompany me. We got into the location, which was a large, hilly, wooded public garden with many paths and a scattering of what resembled a large beach huts. I typed that we found Max's hut and that he was inside. He looked about 25 and had long, dark, curly hair. Max was sitting on the floor and had an air of a guru. I still don't know who Max was. We joined a huddle of journalists ranged in front of Max. The editor asked Max some questions and received satisfactory answers, while I stayed silent. I and the editor both left, but after a few minutes, I told the editor I wanted to go back to Max. Now I had an idea who Max was, so I felt able to interview him. I wanted to go back so I could demonstrate that I could do a good job after all. I asked the editor to wait for me. After interviewing Max, I couldn't find the editor. I searched and after a while was relieved to find the editor. But next I found that I had lost my notebook in which I had written the answers that Max had given to my questions. So the dream ended with me having obtained little or no usable copy for the paper. Oh dear. What did all this reveal about my psyche? I could hardly wait to read what AI thought. AI began cautiously, saying my dream revealed unresolved feelings about my former life. Revisiting a familiar workplace suggests you are reflecting on past identity and professional life. Retirement often brings questions of relevance and usefulness, and the dream may be replaying those dynamics. Then it diagnosed my wanting the editor to accompany me as a symbol of needing approval or fearing inadequacy. So far, it all seemed true. I never felt I was much good at the job. There was more. AI said Max's useful guru-like presence embodied new thinking or even the next generation. Not recognizing Max may reflect anxiety about being out of touch or left behind by changing times. That's true. Youth culture is a closed book to me, and I have never taken to texting, and tech incompetence prevents me so much as using an app to pay for parking. AI continued, losing my notebook represented a fear of wasted effort, failure to produce results, or losing my voice. Dead right, I've written 4 books, but publishers have rejected my last 3 efforts. The constant anxious tone of the dream reveals fear of inadequacy, fear of being judged, or fear of failing to meet expectations. All true. My parents provided an expensive education, which I never converted to the lucrative career they expected. Well done, AI. I think you produced a laser-like analysis of my subconscious. By the way, not all my dreams are anxious, thanks to a loving lifetime partner and family stimulating adventures and some modest success.
Thank you. Now, Nicholas, you've got Bulgarum, which is an alternative look at the news, please.
Yes, I do. And this is about the cycle stands who have been relocated at Winchester Station. Tree protection measures at Winchester Station are now finished. The groundworks designed to protect trees along the station approach have been completed. Cycle stands have been relocated away from the trees as part of these measures. Additionally, the pedestrian walkway leading up to the station has undergone resurfacing. South Western Railway has welcomed Councillor Martin Todd, the leader of Winchester City Council, to see firsthand the changes to the forecourt area. New planting at the site is to complete the works, which aims to create a more welcoming environment for train passengers. And there is a nice photograph on the front of the station showing the cycle stands with Andrea Panitane, Winchester Station Manager for South West Railway, Councillor Martin Todd, the leader of Winchester City Council, and Phil Dominey, Senior Regional Development Manager, South West Railways, showing the forecourt.
Thank you. Now we have what's on this week. A couple of items. The Theatre Royal on Thursday the 26th of April at 7:30 p.m. have a Pink Floyd tribute act called The Wall of Floyd Greatest Hits Tour. Tickets can be obtained from the Theatre Royal box office on 01962 840 440. An advance notice of something on in the Ark in Jury Street on Friday the 26th of June at 7:30 p.m. It's a country music evening called A Night in Nashville, performed by the Snake Oil Band. More information is on the Ark website, or you can telephone the Ark on 01962 398 046. Now, lighting up time ends Friday the 3rd of April at 6:38 a.m. and begins at 7:41 p.m. On Wednesday the 8th of April, it ends at 6:26 a.m. and begins at 7:49 p.m. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with further items of general news. Nikki, please.
And this headed Donkey Leads Easter Procession through City Centre. I'll put my teeth back in a minute. This year's Palm Sunday procession stepped out through the City Centre in Winchester. The traditional procession on Sunday, March the 29th, marked the start of the Holy Week and Easter. It celebrates the arrival of Jesus in Jerusalem shortly before his crucifixion on Good Friday. Participants gathered at the castle outside the Great Hall before making their way down the High Street to Winchester Cathedral, where there was a sung Eucharist. As usual, the procession was led by a donkey. This year, the donkey was named Romeo. Taking part were senior churchmen and women, the choir and members of the public. And there is a charming picture of Romeo and the new incumbent. And the donkey is extremely woolly, and you can just see the mark of the cross on the back, which donkeys have as a memory of Jesus on Palm Sunday.
500,000 meals are delivered. 500,000 hot meals have now been delivered to residents through a vital Meals on Wheels service. Health and Independent Living Support, HILS, has reached the milestone after launching its Hampshire scheme in October 2023. The service has already supported more than 3,000 people with daily two-course meals and a well-being check. A Meals on Wheels client said, I love the cheerful, friendly and welcoming greeting from the delivery driver, often the only human contact I have in a day. I also love having a hot meal delivered to my door. The service goes beyond food delivery, offering regular source of social contact alongside essential nutrition. Members carry out well-being checks, plate up meals, fetch cutlery, and provide a glass of water if needed. Hills aims to support independence through its Meals on Wheels program. A scheme started in Hertfordshire in 2007 and now also offers dementia support, active aging programs, and community hubs. Hills recently launched a free nutrition telephone support service for Hampshire clients and plans to introduce breakfast packs in the coming months. The service is open to all Hampshire residents, with deliveries taking place between 11:15 a.m. and 2:15 p.m. And there's a picture of four of the drivers holding up cards which says 500,000.
The minister sets out his case. The community secretary has explained his decision on merging councils in Hampshire, saying the move is designed to boost regional growth. In a letter to council, Steve Reed said that the proposed five unitary model would create a simple system with the two cities placed at the centre of future economic planning. Writing to council leaders, he said, I'd appreciate this decision will be disappointing for some, but this option best meets the criteria overall. I judge that the five unitary proposal provides a balanced and robust foundation. It positions the council centred on Southampton and Portsmouth as key drivers of sustained regional economic growth. He added the plans would create a coherent balance between urban, rural and coastal communities. I judged that the boundary changes, which seek to expand the local authorities covering Portsmouth and Southampton, were sensible. The new councils will take over major services, including social care, education, waste and public health. Mr. Reed said that the reforms would make it easier to plan housing, infrastructure and services around Southampton and Portsmouth.
And is headed Friendship Benches to bring people together. A furniture company is giving away friendship benches as part of a scheme to help bring people together. Lazy Susan Furniture is donating 40 free friendship benches to Hampshire-based charities, schools, hospitals and hospices to promote conversations and reduce loneliness. Michael Scott, founder of Lazy Susan Furniture, said, I firmly believe in the power of community, the joy of being outside and the simple act of human connection. These friendship benches are more than just outdoor seating. They are places for people to pause, relax, and perhaps strike up a conversation with someone they have never spoken to before. The benches are part of Lazy Susan's long-running Do Some Good campaign, which donated more than £588,000 to charity over the past 10 years. Designed to create welcoming spaces where people of all ages can talk and connect, the friendship benches will be gifted to 40 deserving not-for-profit organisations across the county. This includes an upcoming pledge to donate 400 benches nationally in 2026. Mr. Scott said, we are incredibly proud to support Hampshire organisations in creating these vital spaces where friendship can flourish and communities can strengthen.
Government funding boost. Millions in government funding have boosted businesses and community projects in the Winchester district. Across Winchester, 82 projects have received support to the UK Shared Prosperity Fund and the Rural England Prosperity Fund, aimed at generating local investment and opportunities. The capital, administered by Winchester City Council, has supported a range of businesses and community schemes, attracting a further 92p in match funding for every pound spent, bringing the total investment to 2.3 million over the past 4 years. Eligible projects have focused on developing new skills, accessibility, improvements, business and growth, and carbon reduction. Among the beneficiaries is a Hursley-based OHCO coffee, which uses the funds to purchase an electric tuk-tuk for mobile catering. Exton-based Morton Patterson also receives support, acquiring a tractor and equipment to expand its services and improve grassland management for biodiversity. SF6 Recovery, a Droxford business specialising in the capture and repurposing of harmful greenhouse gases from high-voltage electrical systems, received £45,000 to purchase a trailer-mounted pump. Ian Stone, Engineering Director at SF6 Recovery Limited, said, "We are extremely grateful to Winchester City Council for their support through the Shared Prosperity Fund. Receiving this funding is not only a practical boost for our business, but also recognition of the importance of the work being done to safely manage and recover SF6, a gas with a significant environmental impact. As for a specialist company operating in this field, it is encouraging to see local organisations backing innovation and environmental responsibility within smaller businesses."
120,000 plus trees have been planted. Tree planting, rare species recovery and community orchards are just some of the environmental efforts highlighted in a new council report. Hampshire County Council's first ever biodiversity report details progress made across the county to protect wildlife and enhance natural habitats. It documents work carried out between January 2023 and January 2026, including the planting of more than 120,000 trees, the creation of new habitats, and efforts to support the recovery of rare species such as the great crested newt, silver-studded blue butterfly, and field cricket. Councillor Kirsty North, the Council's lead Cabinet member for Universal Services, says Hampshire is special. From our coastlines and river catchments to ancient woodlands, rolling chalk downland, and the countryside connecting our towns and villages, our natural environment is one of Hampshire's greatest assets, and I know it means a lot to residents who have chosen to live, work, and raise a family in our beautiful county. This report highlights the work across the County Council to protect and improve our environment, embedding biodiversity into our policies, land management, infrastructure, public health planning and community engagement, explaining how we are working to keep it special.
And some more about Hampshire from Nick Adams-King, the Hampshire County Council leader, headed "Hampshire is not bankrupt." "As your council bills arrive, I want to speak directly to you about Hampshire County Council's finances. With local elections approaching in May, a great deal of misinformation is already circulating. So let me be absolutely clear from the outset. Hampshire is not bankrupt. Far from it. We have delivered £94 million in savings over the past year and expect to achieve almost £40 million more before the year end. That is responsible, disciplined financial management. Demand for social care is rising sharply. The cost of school transport for children with special educational needs and disabilities has almost doubled in 4 years. And Hampshire has been hit particularly hard by the government's latest funding settlement. Over the next 3 years, we will lose £40 million a year in government grants, leaving us the lowest funded shire county in England per head of population. By law, councils must balance their books. Every year that task becomes tougher. More people need our help, costs keep climbing, and once again support from central government has dwindled. Adult social care is our biggest challenge. The cost of residential and nursing care for older people has risen by £20 million in just 12 months, and we are supporting an additional 45 older residents every month as more families turn to us when their loved ones' savings run out. This is a statutory service. We cannot reduce it, nor should we. We are proposing a £971 million capital investment programme, funded largely by developer contributions and government grants. This includes new and extended school buildings, more SEND provision, modern children's social care facilities, major road and bridge improvements, and new waste and recycling facilities, including the ability to recycle plastics. These investments reduce long-term costs and keep services closer to home. The County Council's share of your council tax has increased by £80 a year for Band D property. This will help us continue to prioritise the most vulnerable, older people, adults with disabilities and children who need protection, while also enabling at least £15 million of additional investment in highways resilience next year.
Opera Festival Family Event. An opera festival is welcoming families for a day of music, theatre and creativity. The Grange Festival will host its annual family open day on Saturday, May the 16th, inviting families to explore the world of opera with a hands-on programme of activities and entertainment. Tyler Stoops, CEO of the Grange Festival, said, "The family open day is one of our favourite moments in the festival calendar. It's a chance for children and their families to discover the magic of opera and theatre in a relaxed and playful way. We hope it inspires young imaginations and delivers living proof that the arts and opera are for everyone." Held at the historic Grange Estate, the event is designed for children aged 5 to 12 and offers a behind-the-scenes look at the summer opera festival. Activities on the day will include singing and dance workshops, costume try-ons, prop making and musical instrument exploration alongside theatre-themed crafts and face painting. Guests can also explore the Grange's historic house and gardens. Visitors are welcome to bring a picnic or enjoy refreshments from the festival's pop-up cafe. Tickets are priced at £12 for adults and £6 for children aged 5 to 17, with under 5s free.
I have a story about Riley's outstanding contribution. A student from Hampshire has been recognised for making a difference in his community. Riley Mattock, a student at the Henry Beaufort School, received a Mayor of Winchester Community Award at a ceremony held at Guildhall, Winchester on Thursday, March the 12th. The award was presented at a grand ceremony hosted by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Sudhar Ashwal, in recognition of Riley's outstanding contribution to the school and wider community. Riley said, "I'm grateful to have received this award. This award shows if you put pride, happiness and ambition into your work, you will succeed with a positive mindset. I've enjoyed being able to help others in school and the community, and I'm thankful for all of the support from the Henry Beaufort School who've encouraged me along the way." Over the past 3 years, Riley has volunteered his time every morning to support school operations, helping students arrive safely and assisting staff during busy periods. He's taken on transport duties to ensure that pupils travel home safely. Miss Bean, head of year at the Henry Beaufort School, said, "We are incredibly proud of Riley for winning this award in recognition of his valuable contribution he makes to our school community." And there's a lovely photograph of Riley Mattock and the Mayor of Winchester in front of the staircase.
High Street pruned for safety. Sorry, High Street tree pruned for safety. A prominent tree on Winchester High Street has been cut back. The tree which sits on the high street across from the horse and rider statue is understood to have had 2 feet of growth removed by Merritt tree specialists. The works, which included the use of a spider lift, partly obstructed the side of the road, with cars still able to get through the slightly narrowed lane. Winchester City Council published tree guidance says pruning is used to manage safety risks, maintain clearances over pavements and buildings, and prolong the life of established trees in busy urban areas. A council tree inspection is taken for trees in high usage areas once every 3 years. The guidance notes that for busy areas, trees often need periodic work to keep branches away from buildings, CCTV and signage. And there's a lovely photograph on a sunny day with the horse and rider in the foreground and the tree being pruned by this extraordinary spider lift, which isn't like a crane. It sits on a sort of straddled base and it is very long and narrow, and I would think incredibly brave to go up to what looks like quite an extreme height to prune this tree.
Merger plan is deeply flawed. The leader of Hampshire County Council has branded the government's decision on the merger of councils wrong for residents. 4 new councils covering larger areas will be created on the mainland, with the Isle of Wight remaining a standalone local authority. However, the decision has drawn strong criticism from council leader Nick Adams-King, particularly over plans to transfer the waterside parishes along with Chilworth, Nursling and Rownhams from the Tess Valley into the expanded Southampton Unitary Authority. Southampton, Eastleigh and the waterside area of the New Forest and the southern parts of Tess Valley will form one council. Portsmouth will be paired up with Fareham, Havant, Gosport, southern parts of the East Hampshire and one parish of Winchester. The rest of the New Forest will become part of a council with the remaining Tess Valley, East Hampshire and Winchester areas. Councillor Adams King said that the plans were overwhelmingly opposed by local people, deeply flawed and failed to reflect the community ties. This proposal is not in the interest of our residents, our communities, or Hampshire as a whole. It would cause enormous disruption, create uncertainty for vital services, and sever long-standing community connections.
I want to cover a news item that's hugely interesting for younger people. The search for Samba, the capybara, is intensifying. The search for Samba, the capybara, has intensified more than 2 weeks after her escape from Marwell Zoo. Now the zoo is utilising drone technology, specialist teams and growing global attention in the effort to bring her home. Samba, a 9-month-old capybara, escaped shortly after arriving from Jimmy's farm, while her sister Tango was quickly recovered. Sightings have been centred along the River Itchen, where she is believed to be hidden. Support has also come from the University of Southampton, where researchers from its engineering department and Southampton University UV lab have been using a thermal drone to follow up sightings. The university said 1 week on since Samba the capybara escaped from Marwell Wildlife, and we're still helping with the search to bring her home again. Credible sightings have been reported in Aylesbury, Albrook, Brambridge and Twyford, reinforcing the belief that Samba is staying close to water, a natural habitat for a semi-aquatic species. Pupils at Twyford Primary School have been closely following Samba's story and creating drawings, poems and posters inspired by the missing capybara. This unusual escape has sparked a wave of creativity amongst the children, turning the search into an engaging classroom topic while also helping them learn more about wildlife and habitats. A similar incident occurred at Marwell Zoo around 30 years ago when 2 capybaras escaped from Marwell and were eventually found in the same stretch of the River Itchen after a search lasting 2 months. With teams working around the clock and the public remaining alert, Marwell is cautiously optimistic that Samba's extended adventure will soon come to a safe end. Zoo officials continue to urge the public not to approach Samba if she is spotted. Anyone who believes they have seen her is asked to contact the zoo's dedicated 24-hour hotline on 07436 167 401, sending a photograph along with a Google Maps pin or a what three words to locate the assistance of the search team.
Pub is among UK's best for under £150. A Hampshire country pub that's both homey and indulgent has been named among the UK's best stays for £150 a night. The Woolpack Inn at Totford, near Alsford, was included among 11 others in a list from The Times. The publication pulled these hotels and pubs from their best places to stay in the UK for 2026 list, with a focus on their value. Factors such as interiors, food and drink, location, service and facilities were also considered. The establishments that made the final list offer something special in addition to being affordable. It was clarified that most of the dates where the £150 figure applies are to nights outside of key holiday periods. The full list of the UK's best places to stay for under £150 a night can be found on the Times website here. Why is the Woolpack Inn one of the UK's best places to stay for under £150 a night? The Woolpack was praised by The Times for its interior design and facilities, among other things. They wrote, the interior designer, Nina Campbell, clearly had fun at this centuries-old country inn with the rooms during the £3 million renovation in 2025. There are paintings of game birds throughout, gun butts hold back the curtains, and the vibe is warm, upmarket boozer. There is also an open wood fire, cigar humidor, and an impressive kitchen garden. How clever to pull off both homey and indulgent. Overall, there are 8 boutique rooms where guests can stay at the Woolpack Inn. The pub's website shares that it aims to blend flair and comfort for a luxurious countryside stay. All the rooms are dog-friendly and include amenities such as an espresso machine, kettle, smart TV, Bluetooth speaker, ironing board, and free Wi-Fi and toiletries. And there's a lovely picture of my favourite table in front of the roaring fire.
Steph scoops 1 million jackpot. A woman has won 1 million in the Amaze monthly millionaire draw and is planning to buy a hot tub with her winnings. Steph Churchill, 36, who lives in Hampshire, said the win would transform not only her life but also those of her loved ones. She missed multiple emails from Amaze about the win while travelling back from a funeral. Once she finally responded, Amaze staff turned up at her house to break the news. Miss Churchill said, I'd been travelling back from a funeral, so I was totally offline and I missed all the emails. Then curiosity got the better of me and I opened one of the emails and replied. The Amaze team said I'd won something, and they were coming to my house to reveal what it is. Problem was, I'd recently moved and hadn't updated my address, so they had to dash from my old house to tell me the good news. Fortunately, I'd only moved half an hour away. Then the next thing I know, I'm being told I'm a millionaire, and I just screamed and gave my husband a big kiss and a massive hug. If I hadn't grabbed hold of him, I honestly think I would have collapsed with shock. She celebrated in the cricket club car park after Omaze handed her a bottle of fizz.
A beefeater is set to share her story. A former beefeater will share her story at a special fundraising event in Winchester. Moira Cameron, the first female beefeater in the Tower of London's history, will be the guest speaker at the event organised by St John Ambulance Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. Growing up in a small village on the west coast of Scotland, Miss Cameron joined the army at her mother's suggestion to see the world. After 22 years of distinguished military service, including operations in Northern Ireland and Cyprus, she retired as a warrant officer and then applied for the Beefeater role advertised in Soldier magazine. She became the first woman to pass the interview in 2007, beating five male candidates to break the 500-year-old tradition. Her duties included guarding the crown jewels, caring for the famous ravens, and performing the ancient ceremony of the keys. After serving 15 years, she retired in 2022. Guests attending the event at Chesil House, Winchester, on Thursday, May the 7th, will enjoy drinks and canapés from 7 p.m. before Miss Cameron shares her remarkable personal story at 7:45. A fundraising auction will follow. Tickets are £40. To purchase, to call 07711 409 643.
Choir prepares for overseas tour. A historic choir is preparing for its first international tour in a decade. Winchester Cathedral Choir will perform music in France in May, renewing a 1,000-year-old connection with Fleury Abbey. The tour will also include performances in Paris. A special fundraising concert in the cathedral nave will be held on Thursday, April the 30th, to support the trip. Canon Roland Rehm, Vice Dean of Winchester Cathedral, said, "Being present at the concert will support the Fleury Tour appeal, just as these remarkable young musicians and their colleagues set off for what promises to be a memorable tour. The concert will feature English choral music and will be performed by the choir's boy choristers and lay clerks. It marks the first time in a decade that the choir has undertaken an overseas tour and offers audiences a preview of their programme for Fleury and Paris. The concert is part of a wider fundraising effort already underway, including a stall run by chorister parents at the cathedral's Christmas market. Additional supporters are encouraged to contribute through Winchester Cathedral's Choral Foundation, which raises funds to secure the future of its choral tradition." And there's a lovely photograph of obviously some of the choir boys in their red robes and their white ruffled collars.
Talk by confidant of the Iron Lady. Lady Alison Wakeham, who worked closely with Margaret Thatcher, gave a captivating talk to a full house. Held at St Paul's Church in Winchester, the event raised 2,300 for the mayor's charities. Lady Wakeham, recalling her time working for the future Prime Minister during the 1970s, shared how her secretarial career at the College of Arms led her to Mrs. Thatcher's team. She joined at a time when essential skills were speed, accuracy, and absolute discretion. Using typewriters and carbon copies for speech drafting, Lady Wakeham highlighted that there were never any leaks. She spoke of Mrs. Thatcher's famous work ethic and personal interest in her staff. Though known widely as the Iron Lady, Lady Wakeham stated her staff referred to her as Mrs. T. Dennis Thatcher's crucial role as a steady support system was also recognised in the speech. The insightful talk then touched on Mrs. Thatcher's immense energy on international visits, where Lady Wakeham often accompanied her. Over the years, Lady Wakeham became a close friend of the Thatcher family and remained friends with Mrs. Thatcher until her death. Sharing anecdotes about Mrs. Thatcher's famed handbag, Lady Wakeham mentioned it contained slips of paper with well-prepared points for reports ready for use.
I have a very interesting art about a former minister offers to help the sub-postmasters. That's very topical at the moment. The former Minister for Postal Affairs has said he is willing to work with sub-postmasters affected in the Horizon scandal who are still seeking compensation. Kevin Hollenrake, The Conservative MP for Thurscombe Moulton said that £1.4 billion has been given as compensation to those who are already caught up in the scandal. He made his comments while in Winchester on Tuesday, March the 24th. Mr. Hollenrake said, "There were some horrendous stories. It was a real privilege to be Post Office Minister, and I was campaigning on this matter from the back benches, which I think allowed me to get a better hearing from postmasters on that when it wasn't the official part of the brief. We transformed the landscape. Whilst in office, we were overturned 700 convictions of convicted postmasters because that was not working properly. And that's opened the door to a huge amount of compensation. When Kemi and I took over the brief looking after the post office compensation, about 70 to 80 million had been paid out. Today, 1.4 billion has been paid out. We changed things like not just the overturned convictions, but the methodology of payments, which opened the door to a huge flow of compensation out to people. This is largely working, but individual compensation claims based on a more detailed analysis of their situation do take longer. Even though it's not my brief anymore, I'm not the Post Office Minister anymore, but I'm always happy to help where I can. If people want to contact me with specific cases, I still have good contacts with the civil servants and the Post Office Minister, Blair McDougall, so I'm very happy to help. As previously reported, between 1999 and 2015, more than 900 sub-postmasters were prosecuted after faulty Horizon accounting software made it look as though money was missing from their accounts. Many of the sub-postmasters are still awaiting compensation. The events of that scandal were dramatised in the BAFTA-winning ITV drama Mr. Vates versus the Post Office.
Toddler found unrestrained in speeding car. A driver was caught speeding on the M3 with a toddler standing unrestrained in the back. The incident happened on the M3 in Winchester on Friday night, just before midnight, March 27th, when a Vauxhall Insignia was travelling at more than 90 miles an hour. Police were tracking down the speeding car when they found the toddler unrestrained after pulling alongside. Officers said their concerns quickly shifted from speeding to the far more serious passenger safety issue. A police spokesperson said, "Not only is this incredibly dangerous, but it's also completely avoidable. Notwithstanding the excess speed, a sudden stop or minor collision on the motorway would have had unthinkable consequences for the child. To make matters worse, the driver turned out to have no driving licence. The car has now been seized and action taken against the driver. We can all have somewhere to be, but there is never an excuse to put a child's life at risk like this. Officers confirmed that there was another adult seated in the back of the car at the time."
Exercise class for over 60s, so popular it has been expanded. An exercise class aimed at over 60s has proved so popular that a second weekly session has been introduced. The strength and balance classes, designed to reduce falls and support the health and well-being of older adults, has been running in the Winchester district since last year across a variety of community locations. In January, a new class launched in Stanmore in partnership with the Move Momentum, taking place at a Carroll Centre. Demand for the sessions has been so high that a second class has now been added to the weekly schedule. Amanda Watkinson, CEO of Move Momentum, said, "The response to the new GEMS class was so incredible. It is wonderful that we have already been able to expand. We now have a total of 24 dancers, and it has been fantastic to see new faces finding their rhythm. These sessions offer much more than just movement. They are designed to support memory, mobility, and mood while building a community that truly lifts people up. Our goal is to help everyone stay active and independent, and most importantly, stay dancing. We're thrilled to be back dancing in Stanmore and welcoming lots of people to our community. Classes now run every Monday from 1:30 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. and from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. with the first two sessions free of charge for each participant. Winchester City Council has also introduced sessions at its shelter housing schemes, including East Acre, Normandy Court, White Wings, Richard Moss House, King Harold Court and Hyde Lodge. Seated yoga classes are now available in Winchester Heights, Brendan Care, the Dower House and West Acre Care Homes. Community sessions are also hosted at Week Community Centre and Chesil Lodge. And there's a picture of a group of mature ladies and a couple of gentlemen all posing there with their hands in the air, looking very happy.
I have a railway item here. Spring Steam Gala is coming. A railway gala is ready to transport visitors to the golden age of steam. The Watercress Line will host its Spring Steam Gala from April the 24th to the 26th. The three-day event promises an immersive journey through rail history with a showcase of heritage locomotives, behind-the-scenes tours and family activities along the scenic 10-mile line. Rebecca Daly, CEO of the Watercress Line, says, "Our Spring Steam Gala is always one of the highlights of our events calendar, and this year promises to be particularly special. With an exciting lineup of guest and home fleet locomotives, visitors will have the chance to see and ride behind these some truly historic engines while enjoying everything our heritage railway has to offer. From guided tours of our engineering works to brake van rides, exhibitions and the chance to explore our stations along the line, there will be plenty for railway enthusiasts, families and first-time visitors alike to enjoy. The star attraction will be visiting locomotive BR Standard 5 Class 73156, appearing from the Great Central Railway and the Bolton Steam Locomotive Company."
This one, I'm not sure why I'm reading it, because it's really going to test my pronunciation. Mauritian food back on the menu. And I think Mauritian is a French island, so I was going that direction. Mauritian food is back on the menu in Hampshire, thanks to the owner of a Winchester pub. Drawing on her Mauritian heritage, chef proprietor Sarah Newby Buckus-Jones has launched the Little Mauritian Kitchen at the Roebuck Inn. Available on Thursday, Friday and Saturday evenings, alongside the classic pub menu, she believes that since the closure of Shalina Permalou's La Case Maman is the only place in Hampshire specialising in Mauritian cuisine. Sarah explains, "We wanted to put Mauritius on the city's food map. Winchester has become an established as a great destination for foodies, offering a range of cuisines. However, we realised that Mauritian food isn't one of them. The Little Mauritian Kitchen menu makes the Roebuck different. Not only is the Roebuck the only place in Winchester where you can enjoy Mauritian food, but as far as we are aware, we are the only place in Hampshire. Dishes include gâteau piment, chili flakes, bringele frires, aubergine fritters, gros pois or gros pois, a traditional butter bean curry, and kofte, spicy beef meatballs simmered in a tomato-based curry, accompanied by rice, roti and Mauritian salad. Poudine maïs, a sweet polenta pudding, is among the desserts."
Oh. And this is for motorcycle enthusiasts. YouTuber kept his internet success secret. A motorcycle enthusiast has racked up millions of views online under the radar. John Bennett from Hampshire runs the YouTube channel Lamb Chop Rides, where he shares reviews, restorations and on-the-road commentary about all things motorbikes. Despite reaching 153,000 subscribers, the seasoned YouTuber has managed to keep his internet success a, a secret from his employer until now. Mr. Bennett said, "My employer doesn't know I do the YouTube stuff, so up until this point, this is probably the tipping point now on your podcast. This is the moment." He revealed his secret during the appearance on the Full Chat podcast hosted by Ewan Thomas and David Pruton. Mr. Bennett, who began creating bike content more than a decade ago, said his passion for motorcycles began in childhood and was influenced by his father and uncle. He said, "My dad was well into bikes. He did a lot of scrambling in his youth, and I was a kid. When I was a kid, he always had a bike in the garage. And then my uncle was into a lot of racing, so he was well into his bikes. In the 60s and 70s, he competed, and he was actually really good. As a teenager in the late 1980s and the early 1900s, Mr. Bennett joined a group of friends who rode 50cc mopeds, a formative experience that cemented his love of biking. He said, "There was this little community of bikers. Those mates I made then, I still see a lot of those guys, and it just sort of grew from there, really." A decade-long break from biking followed when he started a family, but he returned to riding after his car broke down. Inspired by fellow biking YouTuber Baron von Grumble, who is now a friend, Mr. Bennett documented a Honda restoration project on YouTube, launching his channel in earnest. He said, "I really enjoyed the whole editing process of doing those videos, and I really liked it. People seemed to like it and watch it, and it sort of grew from there, really." Despite the channel's success, Mr. Bennett continues juggling content creation with his day job, a secret he closely guarded. He said, "I'm trying to do the YouTube thing and the day job. It's quite tricky as both are time-consuming, obviously. I do work from home, so my day job is a bit of a secret." And there's a picture of a very smiling John Bennett of Lamb Chop Rides.
Article about roadworks, which is very topical at this time of year. Pub landlord is frustrated at the impact of gasworks. The landlord of a Hampshire country pub has shared his frustration over the impact gasworks are having on his business. Andrew William Kent, who runs the Cricketers Inn in Easton, says that the works which were taking place outside the pub in Easton Lane are driving away customers, and that he's having issues getting compensation from SGN for the loss of trade. The landlord explained that the SGN had asked for information to be provided on how much the pub was expected to be down during the 11 weeks the roadworks were taking place, from January to the middle of March. However, Mr. William Kent said that this is difficult to calculate, saying that the pub has been in a period of growth prior to the works taking place. He added that he had difficulty getting in touch with SGN's compensation team to get clarification, saying that he kept being put through to the customer service team instead. "We're a business in growth. There are so many factors." He continued, "We're covering our costs at the moment. We wanted to introduce a breakfast offer, but we're struggling to commit to this if we're already down. We're not taking on any new staff or introducing any new offers." An SGN spokesperson said, "We're very sorry to hear that customers had difficulty with our compensation process. Our scheme is set by regulatory requirements, and the eligibility criteria is available on our website." These explain that engineering work must have been ongoing for at least 28 consecutive days and meet specific financial thresholds. "We look at every claim individually to ensure each customer's circumstances are carefully considered. Once we receive the necessary evidence from the customer, we'll be able to confirm whether the claim meets the qualifying criteria." And there's a lovely photograph of Mr. William Kent in his Cricketers Inn pub at the bar.
College makes Wells top 100. A Hampshire school has been named among the top 100 leading private schools in the world, according to a new list. Winchester College featured in the Spears Schools Index 2026, which is described as the definitive guide to the 100 leading private schools in the world. Educational establishments from all over the world are included, and 23 new schools are under place on this year's list. Winchester College was the only Hampshire institution to feature in the top 100, but plenty from the United Kingdom as a whole were included. The Spears School Index is now in its seventh year, and it draws on the expertise of a wide range of leading educational consultants and industry specialists. The index says it identifies institutions that value academic strength alongside the broader cultural, pastoral, and reputational qualities increasingly prioritized by families who are privileged to be able to choose from the very best. An expert panel that helps bring the list together includes professionals with relevant expertise. Exam results and academic attainment are key considerations, but they're not the only factors that are considered for inclusion.
Probe into fraud launched. Four men were arrested as part of an ongoing investigation into alleged fraudulent activity at a testing centre in Winchester. The men were detained by officers as part of an ongoing investigation into alleged fraudulent activity at a testing centre in the city. The operation was part of Operation Henhouse, involving all UK police forces and targeting suspected fraudsters across the UK. In Hampshire and on the Isle of Wight, 28 people were arrested as part of the operation. Five people were voluntarily interviewed and 61 cease and desist outcomes were secured. Additionally, officers were able to secure £309,500 via account freezing orders and £95,000 in cash detention related to cash listed assets under the Proceeds of Crime Act powers. This included the arrest of a 32-year-old woman from Gosport on suspicion of fraud by forced representation and money laundering, and a 34-year-old man, also from Gosport, on suspicion of money laundering. Elsewhere, a 42-year-old man from Fareham was arrested on suspicion of fraud by forced representation, money laundering, and unauthorised computer access with intent to commit further offences.
Council tax rise in April. Council tax bills are rising again across Hampshire this April, but the size of the increase depends on where you live. Fareham, Gosport, Eastleigh and Hampshire County Councils have all agreed their latest budgets for 26-27, setting out changes that will affect millions of households across the county. Although most councils are increasing charges close to the government's maximum allowed rise without a referendum, the final bill varies widely once borough, county, police, fire and parish precepts are combined. After 2 months without a council tax bill, here is how much more residents are likely to start paying from April the 1st in each area. Hampshire County Council, which makes up the largest proportion of the bill, is increasing its share by 4.99%, close to the maximum allowed without a referendum. The rise is being driven by growing demand for adult social care, children's services and support for those with special educational needs and disabilities, alongside wider pressures on statutory services such as highways. For a Band D property, the council tax precept will be 1690.11. That's £690.11 from the 1st of April, representing an average increase of £1.54 per week. Council tax bills also include separate charges set by district and borough councils.
Mum starts classes to fill gap in market. A mother of two from Hampshire has started running massage and yoga classes for new parents and babies. Jodie Greaves, 34, of Bishop's Waltham, decided to set up the classes after becoming a mother for the second time and spotting a gap in the market, a lack of support for parents in the local area. Mrs. Greaves said, "In 2022, I had a little boy and we lived in Hedge End at the time. The market for baby businesses seemed to be at its peak. We went to different groups every day. Now fast forward to 2025, I had my second baby, a little girl. We are living in Bishop's Waltham, and around us there seems to be a lack of groups available. We managed to drive further afield for groups, but I kept thinking it was just such a shame there wasn't much available where, that I could walk to, locally." Mrs. Greaves, who spent 13 years in educational recruitment, began considering other career options she would enjoy. She said, "I wanted to help mums like me. I have had anxiety in the past, and being a mum can be overwhelming at times. So I wanted to create something for mums and their babies that felt calmer. An office job wouldn't suit me anymore. I needed something more flexible. I also wanted to return to working with children as I used to work in the school many years ago." After many Google searches and chats with friends, Jodie decided it was time to train in baby massage and baby yoga. She's now qualified in massage and has almost finished her baby yoga course. Jodie said, "I have run my first massage class for families and a baby spa event. I have loved every minute of it so far. Seeing mums bond with their babies and learn a skill that will help them settle and soothe their baby is so magical. With so many baby classes being aimed predominantly at the baby, I feel massage and yoga can help mum too. It's very calming, eases anxiety, and isn't too overstimulating. Setting up the business while on maternity leave has brought financial challenges, with careful budgeting and resourcefulness needed to get started. Despite this, she said the support from her training provider helped her navigate the practical side of launching a business. She's now preparing to launch classes across the area, starting in May in Lords Hill and Shirley, before expanding to Bishop's Waltham in June. A special Teddy Bears Picnic Baby Spa event will also take place in Bishop's Waltham on April the 28th, giving parents a chance to experience the sessions in a relaxed and welcoming setting. Her baby massage and yoga sessions will run in small blocks and one-off classes, offering parents the chance to learn techniques to soothe their babies while also taking time for themselves. Those interested in attending upcoming classes or events are encouraged to get in touch directly to find out more and secure a place. Go to thenurturespace-southampton.co.uk. And there's a lovely picture of Jodie Greaves holding her baby high up above her in the air.
Thank you. I've got an article here. Hospital of St Cross plays host to new film production. Filming took place at the Hospital of St Cross last week as a new production brought a flurry of activity to the site. Crews, vehicles and period-style scenes transformed the almshouses into a working film set, with filming running from March the 23rd to the 27th. The site was closed to visitors to accommodate the scale and logistical demands of the production. Despite this, disruption appears to have been minimal. Local walkers said the filming had not caused us any problems, with one saying they didn't know anything was going on. Father Dominic Chmielski, a minister at St Cross, described the project as a period piece, adding that the site is occasionally used for filming, while a member of the crew on site said it was a period film about the reformation of a nun. While official details remain limited, information circulating online suggests the production may be titled Reformation of Sister Edith. Casting details shared online suggest Saoirse Groundsell and Tara Fitzgerald could be involved, although this has not been formally confirmed. Founded in 1132, St Cross remains one of England's best-preserved medieval almshouses, originally established to house and care for poor and infirm men, while also offering daily provision to those in need. Today it is still home to around 25 brothers and remains steeped in centuries of tradition, with its historic buildings, cloisters and gardens attracting visitors year-round. With filming now wrapped, the Hospital of St Cross has fully reopened to the public. But there's a follow-on from that. Stranded cat is rescued from the roof. Filming at St Hospital of St Cross was briefly interrupted after a missing cat was spotted stranded on a nearby rooftop. Nala, a silver-spotted Bengal, had been missing for around a week before she was found stuck on the roof of a house on Back Street, unable to get down. Despite attempts by her owners and nearby residents to reach her, the cat remained out of reach. A film crew, which has been working at St Cross since Monday on a period drama, stepped in to help on their final day in the area. After hearing the distressed cat, one member of the crew climbed from a nearby roof terrace, made his way across neighbouring rooftops in an effort to reach her. With no ladder or specialist equipment, he carefully navigated along the roofs before reaching Nala and safely picking her up, and retraced his steps across the rooftops, returning the cat to her relieved owners. The dramatic rescue was watched by nearby residents and captured in photographs by our very own reader, Jane Harding, on whose roof the cat had been perched.
Oh.
Nala was safely reunited with her owners following the rescue, bringing an end to the week-long ordeal. And that concludes our extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors for selecting them and for copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Nicholas Brake.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.